You're listening to episode one of the Where Are Your Keys Language Fluency Game podcast with me, Willem Larson. In this episode, you'll hear a discussion between me and the original developer of the Language Fluency Game, Evan Gardner. We had this discussion in the car, in the rain, on the way back from Vancouver, BC, back home to Portland, Oregon. We were hosted in Vancouver by Dustin Rivers, a Squamish First Nation member, artist, and community organizer, and someone who we've been working with for the past few months to train him to share the Where Your Keys game with his community. In this discussion, we're talking about the orientation night game for the Squamish Language Revitalization Team that Dustin is forming. At the orientation night for the language team, Dustin ran a game in the Squamish language, or Squamish Snechem, for a crowd of all ages. And there's about 14 folks there, children to older folks. We all had a really good time. Along with discussing the language night, you'll also hear Evan and I talk about larger issues of how we present the fluency game and struggles we're having with communicating the experience of it. So, here's Evan.
Well, probably the biggest thing were the number of people who showed. Just the sheer numbers was great. So we had 14 people there. And at first at 6 o'clock there was like one person, and we're like, okay, well, you know, great, one person showed up just spot on time. Wow, that's fairly impressive. And then to have people, then there was this steady stream of people rolling in that just, I mean, that just seriously just started boosting the energy of the room. That was just fantastic. So, and then a couple kids showing up. The woman who said that she was going to show up in the morning and then couldn't actually showed up in the evening when she said she wouldn't. And that was a really nice surprise. That was a real nice surprise. And then what they did with their kids, I almost didn't want to play full. You know what I mean? Did you have that same sense too?
What?
Well, because what they did was, with the inner circle, yeah. They... the people that were there with their kids, they said, hey, come here, sit on my lap. We're up in front. Like, let's rock this. And then to play full on those people, I felt kind of bad.
Yeah.
Because it sort of jumbled their enthusiasm a little bit. But to have them trust the whole scene enough to say, come here, kids, sit on my lap. We're right in front. We're clearly going to... We are in the hot seats. We're going to do this. That was really impressive. And so right from that moment on, I was like, okay, let's, they don't know what they're getting into,
yeah.
But that's okay. They're okay with that. So that was really nice to see. So yeah, so that's probably what stood out was just that first energy in the room, everybody coming in, nobody like I've certainly been in communities where people fight to not be next to the table.
I think what, I think what stood out for me was the transformation over the evening, from that first moment when I asked, hey, do you mind if I take pictures? And Carl kind of growled at me a little bit.
He did. He was like,
whoa. Yeah. And to the moment where, no, I mean, I was videoing the whole thing and kind of getting into people's way at some points, and then nobody cared. I mean, they were having time of their life, and language was flowing, and laughing, and kids, and...
We didn't ask for testimonials.
We did not ask for testimonials.
But they suddenly started spewing out of everyone, like, no, I want to tell you, this is great, this is fantastic. Tell me more. There's more here, and yeah, and that was really and when they were doing that, when they were doing their testimonial moments, or when they were like really just really, I think hopeful was really the more summary word, like you said last night, that they would look up at you, like, while they were, like, sort of spewing their love, and they'd kind of, like, look up at you and go, like, oh, this is on camera? Well, all right. But, you know, it was like, but there were several people who would, like, look up at the camera and then look away, but not look up at the camera and then look away as, like, oh, dang it, he caught me on film. It was like, yeah, whatever. I'm on film. Okay, well, like, it's a little awkward, but I don't necessarily care.
Yeah, right.
So, and you know, and I don't know if people were in the love glow, the afterglow of,
yeah,
of having had some success, or if they were just there to support the language itself and were like, hey, anything we can do to support this, anything we can do. But I don't think so. I think it's the first. I think everyone generally had that aha moment where they saw, I think they definitely saw the sign language application. And I think everybody went, oh, I know what that means. It's clear to me what that means.
That was really, you know, that whole evening was very affirmational for me on how we're sharing the game, because it's so difficult to explain it. So difficult to explain it. So difficult to communicate over the internet and video. So difficult. You know, we get skepticism. I've gotten a couple comments about being suspicious, you know, about whether we're just, there's just so much hyperbole about what the game can do. And it's moments like that unfortunately we have that on video, where a group transforms. Like, they transformed. They transformed from
hi, I'm Carl.
Yeah. To people who were,
I've got a budget.
And filled with this feeling of, they were filled with a feeling of, I'm fluently speaking my language with people who are my community, you know, with people who are my extended family, with people who I'm related to. Like, they were just a glow. And it's, I don't think in describing, is the game about speed? Yeah, sure, it's about speed. Is the game about teaching and learning? You know, yeah, it's about effective teaching and learning, you know? But, you know, it's not so much about, wow, we can do in 4 hours what somebody else needs 50 or 100 hours for. That transformation is what's amazing. Like, there's no point in putting a number on it, you know, except for just the overall process of improving the game. Like, the number of hours it takes someone to get to novice or intermediate, or, you know, to move through those territories up advanced to superior. Like, yeah, those we'll be constantly improving those, but that's just sort of a matter of fact. It's the emotional transformation. It's the feeling of playing the game that seems to be the most remarkable thing about the game. That feeling is something that I really only think is possible to communicate by experiencing the game in person and experiencing it with a skillful leader, hopefully. But, you know, however you experience the game, you know.
Well, I think the analogy to Twister is somehow appropriate.
Yeah.
Like nobody got Twister. Nobody understood Twister until it was on like Johnny Carson or something. Johnny Carson was playing with, who was he playing with? Jaja Gabor or something like that.
I don't know.
Yeah, it was some sort of crazy thing. And well, I mean, then the world saw the game and then loved the game, and then it was, you know, fantastically popular for, you know, a year or two. But it's like, how would you describe Twister? We spin this dial, and then you put your hand on a colored dot on the floor, and everybody else does the same thing. What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
And, you know, you have to see, and it's not, and it's not something that you can actually even barely capture still pictures of, because then it kind of looks like what's the point of packing, you know, how many people can we fit into a VW Bug? Like, what's the point of that?
Yeah.
It's not actually to see how many people you can fit.
Right.
It's how close can you become as a community? How can you communicate? How can, it's like this rope store, this rope course stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But with this sort of amazing byproduct of, oh, yeah, and you're going to learn your language. But it's funny that the whole we make you know, it's a community building game. That like I don't know, does that have the marketing punch?
You know, we were talking about this before. I absolutely think that what we have is a method of community revitalization, learning community revitalization, not necessarily just language revitalization at all. I mean, I think that's exact. I think it's way more accurate to say we revitalize the interactions of a learning community, people who are, you know, purposing to reacquire, revitalize a skill set, a language, something. They have a goal, right? So we revitalize their ability to achieve that goal. And I mean, that whole piece about it being a community-wide game, you know? Like those college games, you know, kids play, like the Assassin or Mafia or whatever. Like, it's a, you know, you never know when, at what time a guy's going to come behind a door and point a squirt gun at you and say, got you, you know? That's where your keys is. It's ultimate goal is to create such a network of walks, Such a network of gameplay, such a network of language hunting, that you never really know when you're going to be hit by a person who comes up and says, "What is that?" and starts a conversation.
It's kind of amazing that, yeah, that is that. You're going to get hit with the "What is that?" Somebody's going to "What is that?" you.
Yeah.
You know, and I wonder how long that takes in a community for. You know, that sort of randomness of people coming up to you and what is that in you? People,
yeah.
You don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
But because the game is now spread, it's inevitable.
Yeah.
And now you're just waiting for it to happen. And I think waiting for it to happen and knowing that it will happen eventually,
yeah,
then it is kind of like that game of Assassin or Gotcha or whatever, where you're, yeah, where you're like, well, now I'm ready. So if you're ready all the time, then your mind is thinking and you've made that switch into now you're thinking in the target language. You're experiencing life in the target language,
yeah,
because you're all of a sudden kind of walking around going like, well, oh, is she going to ask me?
Yeah.
And is he going to ask me? Oh, maybe he's going to ask me. And great, even those moments of, you know, 2 seconds of wondering if they're going to ask means that,
yeah,
in their head they thought, stomp tight.
Yeah.
They can't avoid it. And so I was actually having this conversation with Thomas the other day, and like, you know, I don't really know, and it kind of almost starts sounding a little bit cheesy when you start saying, well, I don't know what Where Are Your Keys is.
Yeah.
Is it a tool in the toolbox? Is it the toolbox? Is it the organization of all the tools? Is it the organizational component of your toolbox?
Yeah.
Is it the guide to manufacturing toolboxes around the world? I don't know,
yeah,
how to.
Yeah.
It's all of those. At any moment, it starts sounding cheesy. It starts sounding like snake oil.
Yeah.
It cures all ails and
right,
and makes pigs fly.
Yeah.
But yeah, to have people like that one woman, Shirley, she was like, I'm gonna use this in my class tomorrow.
Yeah, right.
Wonderful. Yes, yes, you are. You are going to use this in your class tomorrow.
Yeah.
And to have that, yeah, to have that ability for people to walk away and say, I'm going to use something from this tomorrow in my class.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's the community organizing piece, that the community gathering. You know, did we get any video of the beginning of it? Of like when people were just sort of sitting there kind of looking at each other funny? Because that would be nice to somehow capture that feeling of awkward,
yeah,
and
awkward, non-form,
yeah,
glowy,
yeah, yeah, and then the aftermath of then like of that, not being able to get rid of people, they won't leave.
Yeah,
the people won't leave.
Yeah.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? That happened again. People didn't want to leave. People didn't want to leave, and in fact, Dustin's cousin wouldn't stop playing even. Wanted more Craigslists, wanted more interaction, wanted to know the next thing, the next thing.
I was really impressed. I was really impressed with Dustin right then, because instead of Dustin's, I think we've turned a corner with him.
Yeah.
Because instead of like going into suffixes and prefixes, he walked over and grabbed a rock.
Yeah, yeah.
That's just huge. That is just the biggest breakthrough moment. And for me, really, that's one of the bigger breakthrough moments of the weekend.
Yeah.
Was getting him to do that.
Yeah.
And then the other breakthrough moment was walking through the mall and having him realize that he was walking ahead of us and outpacing us and stopped and then came and like stopped and let us catch up. Yep, big.
Yeah, Dustin learned a lot this weekend. He learned a lot. It was pretty solid. And especially since, you know, what have we been telling him all along? It's like the decelerators that you want to do, explaining prefixes and suffixes, grammar, structure, rather than just playing and speaking in the game. All those little things where, I don't know if I want to do that technique or this technique. And every time he said that to us, turning around going, listen, what you're saying to us right now, somebody at some point is going to be saying to you once you've mastered this game. And this is what you say to them, and we're saying it to you. You know, it was just such a like, whoa, hey, where am I? Is this Canada or Mars or Kansas? I don't know. So, yeah, and I totally hit home. Ball went out of the park. He ran with it. Can I mix my sports metaphors? Do they run with balls and baseballs? So yeah, it was really, really quite something to see. And man, that whole group. And you know, how many in that group saying, next time I'm bringing three people. Next time I'm bringing my cousin. Next time I'm bringing my sister. You know, next time I'm bringing my neighbor.
Well, which scared the hell out of Dustin.
Yeah.
Because, to have him giggling like that while we were walking down the street, and he's right. He was kind of drunk.
Yeah.
Like, he was sort of, and I mean, drunk with this emotion of, my language is not going to die. And you know, if it does, he gave it a hell of a shot.
Yeah.
But I don't think that, you know, it's got suddenly its best chance that it's had in a long time.
Yeah.
And he's elated and just drunk with happiness about that possibility. And so about 5 minutes later, kind of have this realization of like, what if 100 people show up?
Yeah.
And he's rightfully so a little scared. But yeah, I mean, I think that would be the best thing that ever happened to the language, would be 100 people show up and think it's a kegger of some kind, and then get like, oh, it's the language? Oh, okay, well, I'm here. So, yeah, did you go to that party at Dustin's? Nah, that was great. So, yeah, I think that'll... Well, we're coming up on the U.S. border. We better get it in the character.
All right, starting again March 10th, Wednesday, March 10th, resuming our debrief about the Wariukee's Squamish Language Team Partnership Weekend orientation. So where did we leave off?
Well, we were just talking about the whole thing where, like, what techniques do we hit when we first get out of the gates, and about we do a great presentation and people are having fun and they're learning their language, and because we've set them up nicely with the sign language, everything makes sense. They see where they're going. They see where they're at. And then, you know, this kind of happens every time, really, that there's somebody brings up this idea of, well, we're just not, our accent just isn't perfect. And, you know, and that's absolutely true, completely valid. Absolutely valid point, but it's faster to just do technique, let it go, and have the experience of putting words together and making sentences and creating language and wielding the language. I mean, with even a horrible accent at first, but the experience of speaking is more important than the experience of speaking with a perfect accent. It's almost like asking someone, well, we have one speaker of our language left. He's a fantastic person. He's got a great sense of humor. He's a wonderful teacher. He speaks the language absolutely fluidly, but has a Russian accent. Well, then there's some big choices to be made. Do we want to keep our language with a Russian accent? Or do we say, well, the Russian accent is the thing that kills it, so let's not speak our language anymore because it's got this Russian accent on it now.
I
would venture to say that there would be a whole lot of folks who would say, well, we'll take it even with the Russian accent.
Right.
But if we have that opportunity that a whole group of people are going to get up and running in a language, and then they are able to speak to someone with a good accent, well, then they're going to be able to speak with a good accent where that person can fine-tune them and straighten their accent out and really give them some good pointers, but in the language itself and during flow of communication and not during, you know, exercise drills of language. And yeah, I think a person can be perfectly adequate to say, hey, pay attention to the accent we're using. But also I think it's another valid point to say, you know, don't worry about it and just go for close. Go for close. And in my professional opinion, I would strongly recommend that people go for close and don't necessarily worry about the perfection, because it's a time drainer. It's a time drainer, and every time that you adjust someone's accent over adjusting their words, it seems like the accent adjustment is something that's like a negative. And the word order adjustments are taken with a lot more grace. They're like, oh, thanks, you're teaching me how to speak. But the accent adjustments are like, oh, now you're just nitpicking me. And that's the, man, come on. So it's almost a thing where, with the sign language, I don't spend a lot of time on correcting people's hand shape and their really specific movements, and I've watched a thing happen over the years that their hand shapes improve over the hour. They start out with the funky, you know, instead of that with the hang loose, they start out with the that that's like the devil giving it the horns kind of thing. But eventually, by the end of that hour, everyone seems to move to the hang loose. They just do it naturally. And so I have this solid proof in my experience that if you just let it ride, that in the context of the conversation banter back and forth, people self-correct. They do it on a regular basis, and it's almost like clockwork. How many times you show them the hang loose that sign to when they self-adjust. I would be very interested in somebody doing a PhD study on all the video that we've collected to say how many times they need to see the hang loose that before they self-adjust. I'm going to say it's somewhere around, you know, 50, 60, 70 times or something like that, and then they just self-adjust. I'm including all of the other people and the players that are in that 50 or 60. So,
sure.
You know, there's also the peer pressure part of it that helps that adjustment. So I don't really mention it because I know that it's going to get self-adjusted. But really to avoid that downer of someone somewhere along the way saying, well, you guys really need to be paying more attention to accent, or we need to be paying more attention to accent, when the truth is we need to be paying a little bit less attention to accent.
Yeah.
And almost even just mumbling is, in effect, in the end, a higher accelerator than actually speaking the words. I would also be interested in a secondary follow-up PhD study about if people mumbled and didn't care at all about the actual specific words they were using, but just sort of mumbled and kind of got it close, like they were, you know, humming along to the music kind of thing, instead of really talking. I would be very interested to see how their language acquisition speeds up or
yeah.
And how fast exactly.
Yeah.
But when you tell people that, because they do have a very valid concern about, you know, corrupting the language and that kind of thing, it's counterintuitive, so it strikes them as a bit odd, and so they bring it up because they don't think that we're paying attention to that. They don't think that somehow we've thought of that, which I think is kind of funny. That I'm not sure what kind of expertise we need to like lay down on the table that says that we've thought about this, while also saying, you know, there's a million things that we haven't thought about. Yeah. You know, but to have that be able to nip it in the to be able to announce that at the very beginning of the game may be even more important than like technique. Obviously, it might be important just to clear the air right from the get-go and say, hey, this is a game about coming close. And we're going to come close, and the closer you can come, and when you see that you're doing something funny, hey, try and adjust it. This is about self-adjustment and helping each other and just letting it go and having a good time. It's not about nitpicking and that kind of thing. We'll get there.
Yeah. You know, it's true. Now that I think about it, this is our first new language where we start with a totally new group. Totally new group, totally new language, a group that is intensely concerned about saving their language. Not like we're like running a demo game of Japanese or, you know, and who cares anyway. And so, and we run loads and loads of sign language games with as demos. So that doesn't really come up then too much because people don't get as hung up about it, about sign, unless you have an ASL practitioner there who's not on board, right? Who's like, well, you're doing it. So it's popped up then, but that doesn't happen that often. I think what we learned, we really like got reminded, because normally we're good mind readers. Like we know that certain things happen every single game. And certainly this thing that happened will happen in every single new game of a new language group.
Yes.
With somebody with any sense of ownership and enough mental bandwidth to watch the game and also think about, what would I prefer? Most people at the table are going to be totally, like, fully tapped just by playing. But there's going to be that one person who already knows some of the language and has a young mind and is still pretty fresh. And at the end, they can sort of go, hey, why don't you do this or that or this? And it has that possibility of throwing out decelerators. So ideally, next time we have this game, and maybe even with the same group, I mean, obviously we're going to have to cover it, you know, make sure it's covered, because we asked Dustin to cover it, but make sure it's covered of starting the game out with, listen, we don't really care if you mumble. You will learn faster if you mumble. You know, so you people who are have a strong sense of the correct accent, perfect. Hold on to that. You know, sorry, Charlie, destination. We'll get there. We're not there yet. Right now, we're just some kids mumbling, right?
I wonder if we can make it sort of metaphorical, the dance steps, you know, and say like, hey, this is the first day of, and some sort of dance step that you know, I mean, I don't know what dance is, the universal understanding of dance step, you know, I don't know, but maybe like salsa, because a lot of people like, I think most people in the world appreciate salsa as a fast, fun, exciting thing. And so, like any metaphors we use, I think it's important to keep that idea of fast, fun, exciting kind of thing. And, you know, kind of sexy and, you know, like twirling around. And
Lindy Hop.
Yeah. Not the waltz. No, you know, this boring, staunchy, do it right or we'll kill you kind of thing. You won't be accepted in our society. But, but salsa dancers, you know, for a good chunk of the time, especially beginning, you know, you just want them to sort of float through and kind of do it at first. And especially then with kids, you're not going to expect that they're going to do these perfect hip pops at every corner. So to just accept that and know that that's where we're going, but this is how we get there.
Yeah.
Through the mumbling and through, yeah, you know, just sort of coasting through and singing along and enjoying yourself. But overall, the most important is to enjoy yourself. So what do we have to do and how do we have to set this up so that we enjoy ourselves and not worry that we're doing it wrong? and I think that that's certainly a valid point to hit right out of the gates. Look, we know that this is going to come up. We absolutely respect that, and that's where we want to get, and we will get there faster than anyone else has ever gotten there because we aren't hung up about it. And then I think that that's going to alleviate a lot of the pressure. And I think that's also going to alleviate a lot of the pressure of, like, them kind of looking at I felt like last night when I took your seat, when you started filming, and I jumped into your seat when Dustin was running the game, that a lot of people were looking at me for language. And I wanted them to be looking at Dustin for language. And if we had had, like, if that game was going to go on longer, I was going to tell people, hey, don't look at me, look at Dustin. I'm learning right along with y'all. Look at him for the language part of this. But I knew that we were only going to be in it for a couple more rounds, so I didn't want to go there. But because also Dustin was doing just a great job, and I knew that you know, he was going to have the experience soon, so I wanted to help run the game a little bit more fluidly so that he'd have some more backup supporters. But yeah, any more thoughts on that part of it, on the whole accent versus let it go?
Well, basically, it's just that, you know, since the same game, same thing happens in every game, or in the same environments, one of the techniques is basically, you know, technique mind reading, knowing what's going to happen in that environment, and pre-addressing it. Pre-addressing the objections, pre-addressing the complaints, pre-addressing the disappointment. Like, no, don't enjoy it. Don't be disappointed. You had a great time. This, everything's happening step by step exactly as it needs to. And the thing you're hungry for that you wish having this time, we're totally going to get there, you know? And that's just part and parcel of the science of the game.
You know, I think maybe with that in mind, I have, you know, my go-to techniques at the beginning are, you know, obviously. Yeah. I don't really even mention technique really too much now. It's more like obviously. I think technique is more for people who've played a couple times and, yeah, kind of ready for that sort of thing. But the one thing I think that we could spend more time on at the beginning is like, hi, welcome to Where Are Your Keys. Technique, let it go. Yeah. And really hit that let it go. Right. To just drive that point home. I think that'll really alleviate some fears, because people sitting down, they're kind of nervous, they don't know everybody, and, you know, and kind of get that kind of thing. And almost like, you know, maybe to set the tone of a game a little bit even better is like, technique, let it go, and then have everybody fan each other, let it go, and then do a how fascinating right out of the gates. Like, I wait until a mistake happens to do a how fascinating, but I wonder if that's the most appropriate thing to do.
I've begun to wonder that if we shouldn't say, if how fascinating isn't worthwhile to say every time there's a successful moment too, like a transaction moment. Like, though we have those moments, and what we do is we say perfect, and it just doesn't, like, hit the note of, like, wow. Because usually we'll go perfect, and then we'll go, wow, wasn't that amazing? It's like, well, rather than saying perfect, then why don't we go, how fascinating, we made it, you know? So, because how fascinating is addressing moments of hyper learning, and right. That's an error moment, and that's a
hyper learning.
Yeah, and that's a, you know, if you can stay open during the digestion of the, you know, the misstep or whatever you call it, you know. But then also, like, the achievement moment where it's like, oh my God, I'm holding the car that I asked for. Wow, and he has my two objects I traded. Yeah, how fascinating. Yeah. So I think, and, you know, certainly the Squamish, you know, translation of how fascinating it would, you know, still fit, you know, like.
What was that translation anyway?
I don't remember, but
I remember it not being an issue.
I'm really excited about how he's, you know, whoa. Yeah, the muck and the for full. Muck is for full, and he's really like, it's like, man, yeah, if, because you know people are going to be saying how fascinating if he doesn't translate it soon, like around their community. And we need them to be speaking Squamish, not English. And so translate that sucker, you know? Yeah, I'm really excited about the level of ownership that
that Dustin achieved while we were there.
Yeah, absolutely. That's huge. Certainly huge. And I didn't know that he was translating those. Did you know that he was doing that?
No.
Yeah. I mean, that's... He keeps these little secrets, doesn't he? which is fantastic, you know, but... Having that how fascinating moment. I kind of delved into it last night, and I think I hit it nicely with the whole, like, you know, how fascinating and how wonderful that you're making mistakes in your language. You're experimenting. You're trying. You're here. You're doing it, and you have a group of people that are helping you. That is the fascinating thing.
Right.
So that's what I'm really, you know, I think I hit that part, but then didn't have that positive thing on the end. And to link the positive with the negative, I think, is the real accelerator there, like you're saying.
Because I don't know about you, but I want to say how fascinating anytime someone calls full. And I'll start out doing it, but I'll stop doing it after a while because there is this sort of tang of, oh, well, I don't want to make it seem like every time they call full, it's a mistake. And so, I mean, it's clearly, you know, we're holding the power of how fascinating back, I think.
Yes.
Isn't this Bellingham?
Next one.
Oh, okay.
This is, yeah.
So we're totally holding the power back, and it's like to really let that horse ride and go as far as it wants to go. The great thing about some of the techniques is they address two or three things at once. Like, and you really can't peel them apart. Accent addresses the issue of, well, you've got the wrong accent, mine's the right accent. And also the issue of, well, we got to work on your accent before you learn new words. Right? So it addresses multiple things in a really strong way, and you can't really, it's not useful to peel them apart.
Which I think you should be clear about here, about, you know, is it more important to focus on your accent, or is it more important to, get the language flowing?
Right. And it's clearly more important to have fluency of language exchange than it is to have, a perfect audio recording of the accent that the fluent fool gave you.
Yeah.
I mean, it's about exchange, and in that sense, it's if someone's like, well, my dialect is the correct accent. You know, I've got California English; it's correct. Your Georgia English is incorrect. It's like, well, okay, but if that's so, then our conversation is over, basically. So, how do we keep the conversation going?
Well, and this sort of brings up this other issue that we're going to get into with native languages. That's really a delicate issue, but one that's going to have to be somehow fiercely dealt with in some manner. And that is that we have one community, so we have a big community, and we have some speakers in that community, some fluent elders, some fluent fools who can really wield the language wonderfully. And then we have, let's say, another sort of community that used to have a dialect. And by dialect, I can mean, like, the grammatical structure can be different, or it's just an accent difference.
Yeah.
So, okay, well, let's say, just for argument's sake, that it's an accent difference. That the structure is completely the same, but it's an accent difference.
Yeah.
Now, let's say, though, that community has actually lost their ability to structure the language.
Yeah.
So they remember phrases, they remember words, but no one in their community can actually put Humpty Dumpty back together. So then we've got the neighboring community who actually has their structure still and can put Humpty Dumpty back together, but it has a different accent. So then you say, well, when you are now learning, then we run this risk of folks saying, oh, well, that's not my accent. And then saying, well, do you want the structure or not? Because right now you really don't have much of anything. You've got a memory, but you really can't do much with it. So my argument would be, let go of the worry that your accent is correct or incorrect. Learn the structure. Remember as much as you can of your accent, which means you're going to have to get together with your community and make sure that you as a community remember that accent. But don't hold on to it or criticize folks when they're trying to teach you the structure of the language. It's you know, it's kind of difficult at that moment to learn the structure and hold on to the accent ferociously at the same time. But it would be a fantastic thing to be able to hold on to the accent long enough so that when you do have the structure, then you can reapply your accent on top of it. So I'm not sure exactly how that happens, but to say that we are in full support of keeping that accent is absolutely worth mentioning. But also to say, don't hold on to your accent over structure, because the benefits of having the structure outweigh the benefits of having the accent.
Right, right.
Yeah, I mean, I include a high quality, perfect, exquisite accent as part of fluent proficiency. I mean, absolutely, it's not separable in the end. And there is an order in which to learn things. So if we thought learning the accent first would speed up things, then well, shoot, learn the accent first. It's simple learning. It's how people learn. And what is our overall overarching value is the most rapid emergence of fluent proficiency possible. How quickly do we get to the point where you sound like an absolutely native speaker, indistinguishable from the accent you're shooting for? That's it. That's all we're looking for. Great. You know,
that's it.
So getting there means giving up that perfect accent in the beginning.
And I think that to really put a fine point on it, that we are interested in evidence based. If it worked, we would do it.
Yeah,
and
right.
So for folks it's a little frustrating when folks say, well, you know, you should do it like this or you should do it like that. And it's kind of like, you know, if we had seen that it worked, we would absolutely do it, because that's what we're interested in, because we know that the speed to fluency is the thing that keeps people coming back, because they're having an enjoyable mind time because they are having successful moments. So everything that we can do to encourage successful moments, we're going to do it. If success means, if success means bamboo shoots under the fingernails, we'll do it. But it doesn't have the learning curve that wonderful, enjoying laughter has.
And with that, we shut the recorder off. So I hope you enjoyed listening to this conversation between Evan and I. And stay tuned for the next episode of the Where Your Keys Language Fluency Game podcast. We hope to present regular recordings of our debriefs, especially to show the highly technical nature of the game. Though it's definitely a crowd pleaser, there is an extraordinary amount of design and planning and intent that goes into any session of Where Your Keys that Evan and I present. I'd like to thank Dustin Rivers and the rest of the Squamish community members who showed up that night to join the Squamish language team. Each one of them made a real difference in the future of their language. This has been episode 1 of the Where Your Keys Language Fluency Game podcast with me, Willem Larson. Thanks for listening.